Some people think he's the right pick for Chicago. So, like, there are those that think he's the best quarterback in this draft. I think if you flip a coin between he and Caleb, it doesn't matter what side it lands on, I'll be okay. But he brings he brings what Lamar Jackson brought when he came into this league, which is a dynamic athlete at the position. Here's the difference, though. I think Jaden, at this point in his career, is a better passer than Lamar was when he came into the league. And so when you add that together and you just look at his trajectory, it's unreal where he is right now. He's playing the best football of anybody entering the draft. If you're Chicago, you really have to have a serious conversation. Are we taking the right guy? Because all reports are they've honed in on Caleb Williams. Are we taking the right guy, number one?
8 days out from the draft.
It's wacky season.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it is.
Booger McFarland there saying Jaden Daniels might be better than Caleb Williams, which I know there was an audible reaction to when he said, this is like Lamar Jackson, except Jaden Daniels is a better passer.
Why is that such a surprise?
And the reaction was like, ooh.
Ooh, hot
take. The knock on Lamar Jackson was he couldn't throw.
Yeah, right.
there were teams that wanted to make him a receiver.
That's right. That's right. So that is not a hot take in any way, shape, or form. I agree with you on that. What's interesting to me now, though, is, okay, so here we are. What? How many days are we outside of the draft?
It is next Thursday.
So we are basically 9 days outside the draft. Now, for now, Jaden Daniels appears going to the Commanders.
Yes.
So while the games were actually being played in college football, when the season ended, it was Caleb Williams, Drake May, take your pick. They're both going to be great. Mm-hmm. Now Drake May is on the outside, and there's a lot of other stuff happening right now that is directly impactful and impacting the Arizona Cardinals. There has been a very comforting belief for a long period of time that having the number 4 pick in the draft was going to allow Monty Ossenfort to control this entire draft. Now there are reports that the New England Patriots may not be interested in a quarterback, that they may want to be the team that cashes in, that if you are going to extract a king's ransom for that third quarterback taken in the draft, make it us.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's also a belief that if the Patriots really don't draft a quarterback, what are they waiting for? Because the quarterbacks next year are far less than what this crop is supposed to be. So
how gun-shy are they to go down this road again to draft a quarterback?
That's a great question,
they
too.
They were sold not too long ago on Mac Jones, and he's gone now.
Maybe they're bringing back Tom Brady, Vinny.
He's not opposed to coming back.
He's not opposed. If they just call him and ask real nice, I'm sure they might be able to get him back. Okay, here's the other thing that I can't get out of my head. If you are, say, if you're the Vikings and you really do want J.J. McCarthy, do you have to go to 4 to get him? So put it this way, if on draft night quarterbacks go 1, 2, and 3 and that third guy is Drake May or Michael Pett, if that third guy is somebody who is not J.J. McCarthy, and if the Vikings really want him, do you really have to go to the Cardinals to get him?
Yes, because the Giants at number 6.
Okay.
Are linked to J.J. McCarthy and will almost certainly take him at 6.
Yeah, so you get to 5. Why can't you go to 5? You can call the Cardinals bluff because you know the Cardinals are not going to take a quarterback. Now, if that happens, do the Giants get involved and jump to 4?
That's why.
But I don't see that happening. I really don't. And also, the thing about Jim Harbaugh, I believe this more than ever. Jim Harbaugh is not drafting a wide receiver. Jim Harbaugh is going to draft an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman. It's what he is all about. I mean, it is the reason why Michigan is the national champions of college football. Because he doubled down on physicality up front. And true, it worked. This is in his DNA. So he is taking a lineman once I am convinced of it.
So if you truly believe that, you're the Cardinals... The best case scenario then is to move to 6, because then a quarterback goes 4, Marvin Harrison Jr. doesn't go to the Chargers, and you could still get him at 6 then, ending the picks.
I think it's still risky, and that's exactly what Peter Schrager has outlined in his mock draft that's out on NFL.com today. Giants trading up from 6 to 4 with the Cardinals to get J.J. McCarthy.
Ooh.
But this makes no sense to me because the Cardinals just moved down 2 spots. There's no additional first-round pick attached to it in this year's draft. There's no... I can't stand the mock drafts when there's trades everywhere and they don't tell you what the trades consist of.
Mm.
Like, that would make no sense for the Cardinals.
Right.
And in this scenario, in Schrager's mock, he's got Harrison going to the Chargers at 5. I see a lot of logic in what you say, and I know Jim Harbaugh might be playing that shell game because he was very, very high on, you know, Harrison Jr. Mm-hmm. earlier in this pre-draft process. Mm-hmm. But the Cardinals would get Rome Odunze at number six.
And that's Peter Schrager's mock draft?
Yes.
Okay. I think that if you get one of the three wide receivers plus a draft haul, plus a trade draft haul of some sort, then that's a success. Here's another thing that Bob McManaman put out there that I think Mike Florio wrote about this first. If we know the Falcons might be penalized for tampering with Kirk Cousins, who they have signed to be their quarterback. They have posited that what happens if the league penalizes, makes them swap first round slots. Now, that would seem to be very penal, wouldn't it? Okay, we're going to penalize you, Atlanta. You now have the 11th pick in the draft. The Vikings get your number 8 pick. Now we'll call it we'll call it good. So that would change that if that were a scenario. Now, I don't think that's a scenario because the Cardinals, they had to move down in the third round, didn't they?
Yeah, it didn't affect, it was much later in the draft. Didn't affect a first round.
Yeah, there. So I think the Cardinal Jonathan Gannon tampering exhibit is sort of a blueprint that if the Falcons do get penalized before this year's draft, it's probably going to be somewhere third round, fourth round maybe. Mm-hmm. They might look at that as less. It didn't happen during a Super Bowl week with one of the Super Bowl contenders. I don't know. So that's something that's in the air at the very least. I don't know if that's going to affect the way Minnesota looks at its draft capital. But, yeah, a lot of moving pieces.
And then there's the Buda Baker situation. Not a situation, but we have a piece written by Tyler Drake on ArizonaSports.com right now. Buda Baker backs Rome Odunze as top wide receiver prospect of this NFL draft.
Gee, I wonder why.
And there was a tweet from yesterday from Buda Baker. Rome equals wide receiver number one, hashtag go dogs, that is all. Well, today Buda Baker has kind of revised things. And now his stance is, as it opens up, Bugatti Marv equals wide receiver one. Wake up, haters. That is all.
Bugatti Marv.
Who do you believe? Yeah. Is Buddha making this pick? What?
He upgraded from Maserati to Bugatti.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. It's not Bugatti Marv. It's Maserati Marv.
Maserati Marv, yeah.
Yeah.
Harder to spell, though. So I get it.
Yeah, you got something
Bugatti,
there.
Yeah.
But now we are, again, 9 days away from the draft. Cardinals still with that number four pick. And, yeah, the takes are getting pretty crazy at this mm-hmm. time. This is when everybody just goes mad from mock draft overload
and
fatigue.
Where all these alternative realities sort of all kind of morph into one. You're like, whoa, anything could happen. And sometimes it does.
Mm-hmm. You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line. It's open at 620-620. Coming up next, bad takes and weird takes are not just limited to the NFL draft. They're also permeating into the NBA play-ins, and we'll get into some of those takes next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Come on. I'm burning. Come on. Come on.
Arizona Sports.
Ballin'.
Floor Burns with Bickley and Murata.
I'm going to say something in duck because I know that it is controversial and I know that it flies in the face of absolutely everything that the spirit of competition was born to create. And you just said, Herman Edwards, you play to win the game. The Lakers should not play tomorrow night. They should not play LeBron. They should not play AD. They do not want to be the 7 seed. You want to be the 8. I'm taking my chances in a one and done at home against either Sacramento or Golden State and go in against the very young OKC Thunder in round one instead of going into the buzzsaw that is Denver. I think it is worth the risk.
What are we doing here, people? It's Mike Greenberg from ESPN. On the heels of an article written the day prior by Harrison Fagan on SBNation.com, that article entitled, The Lakers Should Throw Their Play-In Versus the Pelicans to Avoid the Nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
I'll ask again, Bick, what are we doing here?
Trying to invalidate completely the concept of the regular season in the NBA. I mean, seriously. I can understand the thought crossing your mind because the Lakers have struggled with the Nuggets the way the Timberwolves seem to struggle with the Phoenix Suns.
Mm-hmm.
But this is also LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And to accept a game against the Warriors, who house them already in Los Angeles, that seems to me to be really, really beyond the pale.
You cannot put yourself into a one-and-done situation.
Against Steph Curry? No, thank you.
Potentially.
Right.
I think we're all feeling like Golden State's going to win that game tonight against Sacramento, right?
Yeah. But
the Kings are kind of floundering right now.
Right.
Yeah.
But the Lakers-Pelicans is the first game. So you wouldn't even have the ability to watch and go, oh, Sacramento won? Hell yeah. LeBron, take the night off. Then you might consider it, but the specter of having to take on Golden State, because then what happens if you lose both games? What happens if you do that? What happens if you sit these guys tonight, then lose to the Warriors? You got to fire everybody, because it's just absurd policy. And yet it's being treated as a legitimate talking point.
If we ever get to this point, I mean, that might be the death knell for basketball. You're in the postseason,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to sit players to manipulate a matchup?
Uh-huh.
Does anybody have any competitive bones in their body anymore?
Apparently not.
And again, we're talking about LeBron James and Anthony Davis, who, if you listen to the show, you know neither one of those guys is my favorite, but come on.
No.
They've got a little bit of blood pumping through their system still.
So the Lakers.
Ridiculous.
So I think this is stemming from the fact the Lakers are 0-3 against the Nuggets. They're 3-1 against the Thunder this year, if I'm reading this correctly. And they've won the last three meetings, although they've only met once since January 15th. So there isn't the recency of the Suns Timberwolves.
Yes, I agree with the theory. If all it was the one game, if it was they win, they play this team, they lose, they play the other team,
mm-hmm.
then I would say, like, okay, that makes sense. You're manipulating who you get to play by just this one game.
Yeah.
But if you lose, that then puts you in a situation where you have to win your next game or you don't make the playoffs at all.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. What happened on the last Sunday, especially in the Eastern Conference, with teams just falling over themselves not to get the 2 seed, the Knicks finally get it. What the Cleveland Cavaliers did should be fined heavily by the league. Did you see what they did? They're up. They're playing a Charlotte. I mean, Charlotte's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But they had scrubs playing the entire game. The Cavs are up like 10 points going into the fourth. They rest everybody. Once Max Strus got the requisite statistics for a triple-double, they played the entire fourth quarter with 4 scrub centers and a forward. They didn't even have a guard on the court because they wanted to avoid the 2 seed. They blew the lead. They lost the game. Now they're in the 4-5 matchup. They get Orlando, which they think is a much better matchup.
Oh, well, it is.
But if they get by... I mean, the Cavaliers folded up so
they're
hard.
They're not
going to
get by Orlando either.
I don't think so either.
I don't think anything of that basketball.
But even if they did, then you get Boston in the second round. Why would you want the Celtics earlier than you need them?
Yeah, why would you want that?
It's so gross what happened.
Yeah, and this is why you mentioned yesterday something that I totally agree with. I'm kind of shadow liking the New York Knicks, which is rare for me because I've never liked that team in any iteration or incarnation.
No.
As a Chicago guy, can't. But this team I do like. And I like the fact that they fought tooth and nail to win in overtime the last day of the regular season, knowing full well the 76ers might drop into their laps as a first-round opponent.
They also lost one of their best players with, you know, a third of the season left, and they didn't fold up, and they stayed. They actually climbed up in the ratings,
no.
Julius Randle.
And now OG Anunoby is back. They're a really good team with him on the floor.
They are.
The Knicks might be a team that could make some noise.
Yeah, when Devin Booker joins them next year, they're going to be unbelievable.
Oh. What are the Suns getting in that trade?
Yeah, right. So I look at that, and you mentioned before the show started something that I can't wait for this to come into being, and that is allowing teams to select their playoff opponents. Having the top 4 seeds, starting with number 1 and moving all the way down, allowing to pick their opponents. The smoke that will bring and introduce into these series, fantastic.
Oh, you want us?
Exactly.
Just imagine that feeling.
Oh, okay.
Do either of you think that will actually ever happen?
If we get teams like the Lakers taking the night off to manipulate their matchup, then yes.
That'd be
and
great.
Trust me.
That'd be fantastic.
Part of me would be rooting for a scenario like Mike Greenberg suggested. The Lakers are like, we don't want the Nuggets.
Right, so they're arrogant enough to think that they can house the Warriors in a one game and then lose it.
So they
it.
Sit and then they get their brains kicked in.
That would be fantastic.
In an elimination game.
I totally agree. That would be kind of cool.
It's such an insane thing because if that played out, there's not a team in the NBA that you would less want to do that to than the Warriors. The people on that team would take that so personally that it would be ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you just never know. There have been nights this year where the Warriors capture that lightning in a bottle, that stuff they once had. And they could do that to you in a one game win or go home.
I think they still have the ability to do it in a best of seven.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But everybody, like ESPN, the narrative at ESPN is, because the Warriors are playing tonight, is this the end of the era?
The dynasty, is it over?
Because if they lose, they're out. So would they make massive changes?
Yeah, I think that the spectacle of the Lakers having to play the Warriors on Friday night is something that I think we all need to watch.
Win or go home?
Yes, because one of those teams is going to go home crying.
Yeah, the NBA does not want a Kings and Pelicans to advance in this scenario.
No.
But we're also ready to suggest these conspiracy theories on matchups and how it affects television ratings. I gave up on that years ago because every postseason, when LeBron was in Cleveland the first time, I was like, oh, real surprise. It's going to be Cleveland against the Lakers in the finals because the NBA wants to see Kobe against LeBron. It never happened. It did not happen one time.
Yeah.
That's when I kind of gave up on any NBA conspiracy.
But we did get LeBron versus Steph. Like six times or whatever it was, though.
Yeah, but was there any doubt that those were the two best teams in their respective conferences? The Warriors were a winning machine, and the Cavaliers feasted on a terrible conference that whole time. Or the Heat.
Yeah,
and you've also got to assume that in terms of quality of matchups, the way this is shaking down, if you get something like... When would the Nuggets, the Nuggets and the team in the play, and they wouldn't play till Sunday. They would never play on Saturday. That would be not fair.
No, because those will be determined on Friday. Right. So those series will start on Sunday.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see where the Suns are going to rank on the market pecking order. Suns, Timberwolves, how do the executives think they're going to rate? In terms of when are they going to tip this game off on Saturday?
I think it's going to be the last game on Saturday.
Do you?
Yeah. Those are the rumblings that I've heard. So that would be like... 6:30-ish.
That probably. Is where, not the time, but ESPN does slot them last on their schedule. And it has Denver on Saturday.
Does it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Because Denver won't play.
That's right.
They'll play the Thursday night game. They'll have tonight.
That's right. Yeah. So if you get the Lakers Nuggets, that would be the marquee game on Saturday.
Well, the Lakers can't clinch that spot. Wait. Yeah. Now I'm confused.
No.
Lakers and Pelicans, yes.
They could clinch that spot tonight. So one team tonight is going to get the Nuggets.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
The winner of Lakers-Pelicans is the 7 seed.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So if that is the Lakers, that Lakers-Nuggets game is going to be the marquee matchup on Saturday.
I said go Pels.
Muck it up.
If we can get a postseason without the Warriors and Lakers,
this is a bad matchup. Listen, Zion. If Zion can rise up and be that dude against every team, it doesn't look like he feels he can do that when LeBron's on the other side.
Or he can get an owie. We shall see. Coming up next, Sarah will take us through the big stories of this Tuesday morning in the Rush Hour reboot. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. Arizona built for America's dreams.
Oh, you just can't get enough of me right now. Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Rush Hour Reboot here on Bickley and Murata Mornings on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. We are catching you up on everything you might want to know in Valley Sports and beyond today. We do it every single day at this time. I'm Sarah Cazell with Dan Bickley.
Hello!
With Vince Murata.
Maserati Mark!
I thought it was Bugatti, Marv. No? Jarrett Carlin as well?
Oh, no!
All right.
That's you.
Oh, no!
What is that from?
That's from yesterday.
Oh, no!
Well, all right, let's start with the Diamondbacks. Maybe it was about the final score. They lost their series opener to the Cubs last night, 3-2 in 11 innings. The Diamondbacks had three whole hits on the night. Merrill Kelly went five innings. He gave up one run, a home run in the second, and then three hits, two walks, and five strikeouts for him. The D-backs had the 2-1 lead in the top of the ninth. Kevin Ginkle threw a pitch that hit the dirt and bounced off of Gabby Moreno, so a wild pitch there that allowed Nico Hoerner to score from second and tie up the game.
The 0-1. In the dirt, it skips away from Moreno to the right, and now rounding third, trying to score is Hoerner. The throw to the plate is not in time. Cubs tie it on a wild pitch.
That's Chris Garagiola for Arizona Sports. Now fast forward to the 11th. Nico Hoerner again delivered what became the winning run with an RBI single off of Bryce Jarvis.
And another 1-2 is hit into right field, a base hit. Pritchett coming in, gloves. He will hit the cutoff man. One run scores, but it's now 3-2 Chicago and still nobody out.
Despondent.
Oh, yes, totally. Beating him down already.
Yeah.
After the loss, Kevin Ginkle said he felt guilty about that wild pitch in the ninth.
You know, I think leading up to that, I feel terrible for not getting out of that spot. It shouldn't have come to that. But, you know, that's baseball. I it's just kind of a weird play. I just bounced off Gabby on a weird spot and went to, you know, the furthest spot from the plate.
All right, what to you guys seems to be the bigger issue? Yes, still early on in the D-back season, their hitting or their relief pitching?
Oh, good question. I think the hitting was disappointing to me for a couple of different things. Number one, Nico Hoerner did to the Diamondbacks what Corbin Carroll is supposed to do to the opponent, create havoc on the base paths. That single, like I said earlier, that ball was at his shoulder blades and he somehow got on his tippy toes and tomahawked it. And then scoring from second, which he did earlier, that's the kind of stuff that I want to see the Diamondbacks do to other teams. And then a two-base wild pitch in that situation, it's not what you expect from the Gink, and it's certainly not what you expect from Gabby Moreno, who's about as good as they get at keeping a baseball in front of you. And it was just one of those weird hops. I think it went right off his hand or his shin and guard, and it just doinked all the way back to the wall.
It doinked all right.
It did doink.
Big time. I couldn't tell if it was off of his glove or off of his knees.
I thought
when it was slow motioned it.
I thought it was his wrist, but I only saw the replay one time.
Regardless, it flew.
He got up like shaking his wrist, but the ball wouldn't fly like that if it hit flesh.
Right.
So I don't know.
What if it hit bone?
Okay.
I agree with Bick. I think the hitting's the bigger issue last night, and even with the hitting being as quiet and as unproductive as it was, they should have won that game last night. It was one of those games where, and I was listening to the wrap-up on the radio, and Chris Garagiola said it, that Leo Gilmartin, the engineer, said, it was a game the Diamondbacks had no business winning and no business losing. And I was like, that's a pretty good synopsis of it. Because
they deserved a tie!
It's participation trophies for everybody. The hitting is concerning right now, to me.
Yeah. All right, the second game of this three-game series starts at 6:40 tonight on 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app, so make sure you tune in for that. The NBA play-in tournament starts tonight with two games in the West. Just in the last segment, you guys were talking about the idea floating around that the Lakers should try to manipulate the play-in tournament to land the matchup that they want. The four teams in the play-in in the West are the Lakers, the Pelicans, the Warriors, and the Kings. The four teams in the East play-in are the Heat, the Sixers, the Hawks, and the Bulls. So from that group of eight, which team will be the last one standing in the postseason?
Sixers. That's my opinion.
Wow.
I think the Sixers should wrap up that seven spot. And you never know with Joel Embiid, any trip down the floor, he might get hurt.
Right.
And a lot of times does. But if he's healthy and rolling with Tyrese Maxey, they're going to be trouble.
What say you, Beck?
I don't know. I thought the Pelicans were better than the way the Lakers handled them on Sunday.
Yeah. It was like a 25-30 point win.
I mean, it was almost identical to the Suns Timberwolves games. The non-competitive nature of both. In fact, at one point in the fourth quarter, the scores were the margins of
they were identical.
Identical.
For a lot of the season, the Pelicans were in like that 4-5 spot.
They were. They we've also seen the Pelicans play the Suns three times and got absolutely destroyed twice.
I know. I'm going to say the Pelicans. I'm going to vote for the Pelicans.
Okay. We will keep an eye on the Pelicans tonight in the West part of the play-in tournament. Let's get to the world of golf quickly to address a report that might actually kill Dan Bickley.
Well, it's going to kill the PGA Tour.
Okay, so for the people who don't know what we're talking about, a London financial outlet called City AM reported this week that Rory McIlroy is close to a deal with LIV Golf. Yes, the group he spent months, if not years, trashing.
Mm-hmm.
The outlet reports that LIV has offered McIlroy $850 million to join LIV plus 2% equity. So that would be the richest deal by far struck by the golf league. The lead of this report from City AM reads as follows. While the eyes of the golfing world were trained on the Masters this weekend, in the shadows, a rumor that won't go away was growing louder, that Rory McIlroy is close to joining LIV Golf. Now, earlier today, in the last hour or two, his manager told another paper, the Irish Independent, that the original report is, quote, fake news, zero truth. But given the way that Rory has really softened his stance against LIV.
Oh, completely.
Recently,
yes. Completely.
Would you guys be surprised?
No. In fact, in talking to some writer friends of mine, this was the worst kept secret of Masters weekend in Augusta. It was all the media was talking about. If you saw reports that Greg Norman was shut out of the grounds and had to buy a ticket and got in as a fan, Greg Norman was following around Rory's group. And people, writers were like, okay. So either it was done on purpose to give life to this rumor and overshadow the Masters, or Saudi Arabia's public investment fund is going to just buy up another piece and they're going to effectively kill the PGA Tour. The PGA Tour is going to have no other option but to hand the keys to LIV and say, okay, your sport now. And then we're going to have to look at the very real end game of a foreign sovereign wealth fund buying up an American sport. Because that's what's happening.
Yeah, it certainly appears that way. I wouldn't be surprised. I really respected Rory McIlroy for his hard stance, and he didn't hold his tongue for the longest time in sharing his thoughts on what he thought about LIV Golf. And then all of a sudden, for it to be softened so much,
something's
up. $850 million, though. Was Greg Norman following around Rory's group with one of those big metal briefcases?
One of those huge checks?
It is just so unbelievable what they have done to this sport. Just ripped it apart, gutted it apart, and just showed the world all the greed inside. Brutal.
That is disappointing. Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah.
All rebooted on this Tuesday morning Rush Hour reboot every morning at 7:30. Coming up next, another thing that's sad. The end of an era. 28 years in the Valley coming to an end tomorrow. Whew, are we ready for this? It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, it's Gambo. Bradley Beal has come on like a force of nature these last few games, and to keep that momentum going for the first round of the playoffs, it's the Burns and Gambo Show 2-6 on Arizona Sports.
I mean, we're blocking everything out. I think last game was a great example of that. Obviously, we have three big games remaining for our group. You know, a lot of guys are up for contracts, a lot to play for. So, team game, when the team does better, everyone does better. So, that's what we're focused on.
That's Lawson Krause last week. Member of the Arizona Coyotes when there's three games left. There's one game left for the Arizona Coyotes this season and maybe forever. Tomorrow night, they will host the Edmonton Oilers at Mullet Arena in Tempe. After that game, maybe Thursday morning, maybe Friday, as Gambo's been reporting, there will be an announcement, a press conference with Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, and Alex Morello, the owner of the Arizona Coyotes, that this sale is going through.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Coyotes are headed to Salt Lake City, Utah.
The NHL's executive committee has already approved it. This is miles down the road. This is happening. It's not a, oh no, this could be, this is happening.
Yeah, there's been such a, I don't know, like a shifting of thought, and I think about different aspects of this mm-hmm. all the time. But the one part, and this, look, this, it's one of those stories that's been in the works for 20 years. We've all been dealing with this. If you have any interest in hockey in Arizona at all, you've been dealing with this for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been long drawn out, but also very sudden. Mm-hmm. And maybe that the end part, the very sudden nature of this move. I mean, there was a handful of games left when this first popped up on anybody's radar as a real possibility. Maybe that's preventing it. But man, the lack of anybody civically, politically standing up and saying, this is not right. It's just like everybody's like ready to wash their hands of this hockey organization.
No, it does kind of feel that way.
Absolutely.
And again, this is, and I think this is one of the fundamental failures when you get back to that Tempe election that they lost to a landfill.
That was the end.
That is the end. You look at that and you say to yourselves, that cannot happen. If you as a franchise, if you're that serious about what you claim to be all about, you spend whatever it takes to make sure the messaging is accurate. And as you pointed out yesterday, the messaging was muddled at best. There were still people voting it down. Hey, I'm not paying for hockey.
Yeah, but well, I'm not going to absolve the Coyotes organization for muddling the message. Mm-hmm. Now, they were clear when they shared it, and I remember having Javier Gutierrez on this show, and I thought his messaging was very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Did they do enough? The answer is obviously no. They've got one game left and then they're headed out of town. That's your answer to the question. Mm-hmm. Did they do enough? But anytime it comes to a public vote, which we knew was a death knell, and it doesn't matter what the subject, what the issue is that people are voting on,
mm-hmm.
there's a good percentage of the people that are casting the votes that are not educated on what they're voting on. That's just an inherent problem in voting.
There have been a lot of people who have asked and have said, Salt Lake City, where did this come from? You do some digging on this, and it's. I find this to be interesting because for many decades, the NHL as the least of the four major professional sports, franchises didn't cost as much as they do in the NFL and the NBA and Major League Baseball, and it created a lot of paper millionaires. It created a lot of people who came in and tried to buy franchises who could make their wealth look good on paper, but there was really nothing there.
Yeah.
And we dealt with a couple of those guys here. The Islanders had got...
John Spano.
Yes.
He had like $8 to his name, and he bought a hockey team.
So
an IOU. I'll write you an IOU.
Yeah, so the league has been through this stage where they've had a revolving door of charlatans and hucksters and you know, $30,000 millionaires.
And all of them have rolled through this town. Yeah.
And they all rolled through Phoenix, Arizona. Ryan Smith in Salt Lake City, you got to give him credit. As an NBA owner, Gary Bettman even admitted this at the All-Star Game. He has just overwhelmed us with his energy and his vision. And what the NHL sees is a A-list kind of owner, which they can't get enough of. So the addition by subtraction, you can infer whatever you want from that. But he, listen, Ryan Smith went into this thing. He staged an exhibition game at the Delta Center. He's been in constant contact with the league, just always checking in, always letting them know, this is what I can do for you. If you ever give me a hockey team, I'll get into the Delta Center. We'll make it more fan-friendly, whatever you need. And he's kept on him, until the point that they developed a trust where they said, you know what? That's the kind of owner we want.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not the city we want, but that's the kind of owner we want.
It's like those examples in the movies, a guy that asked out a girl 100 times until wears her down. And then they finally get married.
Yeah, I did the first part.
Yeah.
Never got the word.
Yeah, that's called stalking.
But the it really is playing out, though, that they just sort of got sick of the nonsense in Phoenix, mm-hmm. the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you pointed out, they're moving to a much smaller market, smaller city that also does not have an NHL ready arena.
No.
And they're doing it now. They could have, they were all on board at keeping them in Phoenix last year if the Tempe thing went through.
Mm-hmm.
There's all this talk about they're buying this new land and all these plans for a new arena. It's only an extra year If the NHL was really into it, they could have given the Coyotes that extra year.
They could have, but you're right.
The
NHL has run out of pace. This is an NHL engineered deal.
There's without
a doubt making this happen.
Without a doubt, that's the big takeaway here is that this is the NHL finally pulling the plug because they are out of patience now. Which is odd because if they really did have a chance to win this land auction, and if they're done believing the Coyotes at face value.
Yes.
Clearly. And it's also clear that the Coyotes, despite a very loyal fan base, never did what you have to do to kind of get the political machinery on your side.
They were never good enough also to get a swell of support.
Listen,
in the valley.
And that's the whole thing. I mean, you can go back and forth. I think it's really, really sad losing this status. It doesn't feel like this market is going to be, having a hard time going to sleep at night. Now, I've heard from a lot of Coyote fans who are very distraught about this.
I have
too.
I
feel terrible for them.
Yeah, because again, that is a fan base that has just been shoveled nothing but crap for 20 years.
And sold nothing but promises.
Yes.
This is...
Can I read a Luke Lipinski tweet?
Oh, I'd rather you not.
Thank you. That was a reverse...
Wow. Yeah. Is he back from Coachella?
I think he's back today, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Talking about being mooned up on the Goons for a few days,
right?
I can imagine. But no, this is, I think, and he's been sort of living through all this work. He's worked for the Coyotes for lots and lots of years.
Yeah.
So he just tweeted an hour ago, 620 goal scorers this season, the most the Coyotes have ever had. 251 total goals this season, the most the Coyotes have ever had. Space? Yippee.
Wow. Yeah, the timing is, from a competitive standpoint, the timing really, really stinks.
No, and tomorrow's show is going to be weird because we'll be on the same day as the last home game. And then we'll be dealing at the end of the week with this announcement to make it all official.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hope for hockey fans is going to turn to what happens in the future, what happens in that auction. And we're going to have a ton of discussions about that, too, because I've made my feelings known. If you are pinning your hopes of getting an expansion hockey team back to Arizona and you're trusting the Alex Morello group to get it done, sorry. I don't know what to tell you.
Mm.
I got some stuff I can sell you if you're that.
You get a bridge? You got some land, Vinny?
I got a landfill I can sell you.
That should be the Utah name, by the way. Utah landfill.
That's, to me, this is why when Gamble laid out the three options, I thought, no, there's one option here. Mm-hmm. And that's them selling the team. Full stop, end of story.
Yeah.
That's the way I interpret this story. It's a shame. And it's the fans did nothing to cause this. Shame.
Yeah, it's terrible. Coming up next, the something that's not terrible. The Bickley Blast is next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.